All right, what's going on, everyone? I'm Julian Alvarez, and I'm here with Claudio Fuentes. Claudio, welcome. Welcome for part two.
Hey, Julian. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Again.
Infinitely. So we're going to be talking about a heavier topic today. What it's like to work on a startup, things not go well, and have to shut it down. Conversations around that. Like, how do you communicate that to investors? What are the emotions that go through it? What are the considerations that come up? How do you frame this, like, failure, quote unquote, in your mind? So I guess to start off, it'd be great if you can paint the picture a little bit by telling us, like, you know, what were you working on Noonshot? What was it about? And, you know, maybe like what started to happen where you felt that things weren't working or things were starting to go south?
Yeah. So a little bit sort of background. Noonshot is effectively, I guess, my third startup.
Yeah.
Kind of been through the ringer a couple of times, each time with a little bit more scar tissue. So definitely an interesting experience. Definitely, I think, has better equipped me. I think failure definitely increases your chances of success. And, you know, the data kind of also represents that. So first two startups, I think, you know, kind of progressively got further. So the context kind of coming into my third startup was one of, I've done this before to increasing degrees of progress. And hey, can we push this further, right? Can we get to the next milestone as a founder, hopefully have a successful outcome? But at the very least, can we just apply all the knowledge that we've gathered to date and just try to do some good? Hmm. So Noonshot was born really, I would just say, at peak hype cycle for Web3.
Web3.
Let's go. And we are basically working on originally what we actually pitched investors on was the problem of, you know, users are getting scammed with NFTs. They are engaging with communities on Discord, and then people sometimes can reach out and send you like a phishing URL that you click on, and then they, you know, steal everything from your wallet, or you end up like actually paying the wrong contract and things of that nature. So we sort of had the insight of like, hey, like Discord feels like it's very kind of Web2 centric. It's based mostly for originally, I guess, gaming communities, and then it kind of grew more into just communities in general. Can there be and should there be a platform that's basically meant for Web3 folk, right? Who want to kind of join communities and feel safe, right? And be able to kind of exchange value and then in the form of NFTs without having to worry about, am I talking to the right person, right?
Yeah.
And these are problems that I guess at the base level, like Web3 had already solved. Like you already had identity. Identity is really the backbone of, you know, decentralized apps. It's like you have your wallet and you can't really falsify whether you actually are that wallet or aren't that wallet.
Yeah. It's on the blockchain.
It's on the blockchain. It's verifiable. You can click on the person, go see their entire history. Are you who you say you are? And, you know, maybe you own some NFT that's actually equivalent to like a badge of I'm an admin for this particular community. Like I can actually verify your identity. So these problems were already solved, but they weren't really implemented in the platforms that people were using to sort of communicate with each other. So we thought, you know, can we build a better Discord that's all about basically making it safer and more frictionless to interact and exchange value in the form of NFTs.
Gotcha.
So that's what we sold investors on when we first started working on it. We raised money on the idea. And we raised money from an angel, and you know, we got shipping. And that, you know, that was a lot of fun at the very beginning. It's just all net new and new features, and new work, kind of just going to market. Very quickly, we learned that actually people, you know, we shipped our first MVP within like, I would say like maybe 3 weeks. People started coming in through the product. People love the idea, but everyone, like we had a laundry list of feature requests that were all based around, I just want great chat capabilities. And the list is basically just like kind of describing, I guess, just Discord and like a very, like a standard chat product, and very little around what we thought was going to make us different. Mm. Right. So our takeaway from that, and after talking to users, was that what people actually want is, like, in order to differentiate and build a great product around this, we're going to have to rebuild Discord in its entirety and then provide a little bit of like a 5% value add kind of on top. And that doesn't feel like a great strategy as a startup, right? Like, yeah, you're not going to have the funds to rebuild a $1 billion product to then test your hypothesis whether, you know, the 5% differentiation is good enough. So that felt like a non-starter. But one thing we learned from that experience was, hey, it seems that a lot of people actually don't have the problem of just better community management. They never get to the point where they need a Discord, and that's the thing that's holding them back. It seems like there's problems a lot earlier in the journey, particularly around how do I, like, what the hell is even an NFT, number one? And two, how do I even get started with them. How do I transact? How do I create one? How do I transact it? Mm-hmm. And that led us to our second product hypothesis, which was if we can enable people that are non-technical to deploy a smart contract and sell their own NFTs on their own terms, perhaps we can then, you know, push them down the road. Maybe later they'll need a community, but at least we solved the earlier problem that we saw was a little bit more prominent. So we started working on that. We ended up, I guess, the summary of what that startup, what we pivoted into was really building like a Squarespace for NFT websites, or like a Shopify for NFT websites. So
yeah, so anyone can easily come create an NFT and yeah, and take a lot of the friction away.
What I call it, it's like a no-code website builder for NFT-based sites. So there's a couple of use cases there, like a token-gated website where like I have some content. And only if you own that a specific token, you can then view that content, how to create those kind of websites. Another application could be like, I just want to build my own storefront. I created some NFTs. I want to transact them. How do I do that? You can do that through a marketplace like OpenSea. But what if I want to own my experience, own my portal, have it on my own website?
Yeah, similar to like, I don't want to sell my thing on Amazon or eBay. I want to sell it on my own website with my own branding.
Yeah, correct. So that felt a lot more solid, and we definitely had a lot more like validation, and we just, you know, hit the ground running. We started building with that, and you know, long story short, you know, to this day, I still believe that the idea could have worked, but there were a series of things that I think ultimately led us to burn through most of our cash and get to a dicey position where we no longer had the runway to see it through. At the same time, a lot of market conditions took a turn for the south, and it was getting very complicated to fundraise and get investor excitement to just, you know, keep the lights on in the startup. So some of it environmental, like some of it like out of our control, some of it within our control. But, you know, a complicated situation that ultimately led us to building as much as we could build and growing as much as we could grow and ultimately failing to raise our next round and deciding to call it a day.
Interesting. Yeah. So I guess like you're building, but didn't get enough traction. And now like, it was like, shit, you were kind of like in this in-between point of like, oof, like, what should we do? Should we like just try to like raise more money or like maybe like call it quits? Like what was the thinking at that moment where, you know, things really started to look like it wasn't going to work? And what were the sort of questions or decision-making process that went on in your head at that point?
So when we were building, we were very optimistic about the product, I think. And again, to this day, I still believe like someone's going to build it and it's going to be successful. So what ultimately, like we knew that we only had a limited amount of runway.
Yeah.
Right. And we were mentally set to like, you know, at this particular time frame, we're going to go out and seek additional capital to just, you know, keep things going. Between now and then, our job is to generate more traction, to just improve our odds of having a successful outcome. What we did not count on was the market continuing to essentially plummet. And in parallel, when we began our fundraise and started actually getting some positive momentum, literally 2 weeks after we began speaking to investors, and as we started having advanced conversations, FTX just completely collapsed.
Oof, that's rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for a summary, FTX, you know, like second biggest crypto exchange right after Binance, headed by Sam Bankman-Fried, and a lot of corruption, you know, mismanagement of money, shit tanked, the crypto world went crazy.
It shook the crypto world to, you know, to its core, and investors that had expressed some interest in continuing the conversation around potential investment just, you know, got busy with like, you know, managing honestly their own bottom line and their own investments, which had some exposure to FTX. And also, you know, reevaluating, like, what are we going to do in this space? Do we still want to continue investing in this space? So again, a series of unfortunate events, both on the market side, which we raised when the market was good. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we built into a bad market. And when we went out to seek additional capital, like not just was the market even worse, but also you had these sort of cataclysmic events that made it a very difficult, you know, moment for basically any startup in that industry to be able to raise. So I consider that the environmental factor, right? Mm-hmm. And again, when attributing like what leads to failure in startups, like there's stuff in your control, like there's improving your odds and giving you your best shot. And there's learnings around like, and we can talk about sort of the things that, you know, looking back, what I would do differently if I could do it again and how it would optimize my chance of success. But there's also environmental factors. At the end of the day, some people right place, right time. Some people like wrong place, wrong time, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we got hit from both sides. I think there's definitely a lot of learnings. At the end of the day, my outlook is actually just a positive one. Like, although it was an unfortunate outcome, I would say like the learnings is something that I still carry on, right? So going on to what I'm doing today, like there's just, it just made me a way better founder having gone through that process and understanding these forces at play. So the most important like takeaway for me is like just not to being too hard on yourself in a way. Like there are things that are in control, there are things that aren't.
Were you really hard on yourself like during that moment, or why was that the big takeaway?
No, I don't think it was, but I think it's a takeaway because I handled it in a healthy way.
That's good.
But I think in the past, like looking back at, you know, two startups ago, I was definitely maybe a lot more obsessive around like it's if it doesn't work, it's because of me.
Mm.
And then I need to really kind of, you know, figure out myself in order to be a successful founder. And it turns out there's a lot more at play. Like startups are meant to die pretty much like from the beginning. Only very, very, very few subset actually are successful. So accepting your odds and then just giving it your best shot, but knowing that like, you know, most likely than not, like this is not meant to work. I think it's just a healthy mindset.
It's like not attaching yourself to the outcome or yeah. Like what else would you say? Like you dealt with it in a healthy way. I think that's really important because many founders are going to be put in the position where either their idea fails or also their startup fails. Like what would you recommend? What mindsets really helped you deal with it in a healthy way?
I think for me, it starts also like with the data, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you actually zoom out from like your individual data point, you look at just how this whole thing works, right? In relation to like startups and venture capital and building technology products, you realize like, A, the vast majority of startups die, no matter how good the founder is.
Yeah, probably like 80, 90%.
Absolutely. And it's probably, it might be higher. You just don't hear about it because the press just, you know, announces fundraise, but like you never hear about startups like really collapsing unless they're like huge companies that just implode. And then B, if you actually look at the history of successful founders, which I think I obsessed about for a really long time, what you realize is most people that actually make it, like they have a lot of scar tissue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's through not, ringer a couple
it's not
times.
Evident. You don't,
it's not evident.
You don't hear about it.
But they have a couple of failures that they never talk about and they're there in the background. So what that tells me as a founder is, hey, if I go out there and I fail a couple of times, it puts me on track to be successful. So
it's a stepping stone.
Exactly. If you actually look at the data and you go deep enough, like what you realize is like, it's just all about practice.
Mm.
Like the only way to become a good founder is to be a founder and fail at it, right? You're not going to be good on day one. You might get lucky. You might be like Mark Zuckerberg, where like, you know, your first, you know, startup in college just becomes Facebook. Sure. But for the vast majority of us, like the actual average, like if you actually look at the vast majority of the data, what it tells you is like, it just takes grit and it takes experience. And the more that you can stick to it, the better your chances get for being able to succeed. At some point, you're going to get lucky.
Yeah.
At some point, the market conditions will be right. You'll be in the right place at the right time. And because you stuck through it and because you improved your skill and your ability to maneuver that environment and then this kind of problem set, you'll be ready to just take advantage of that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like I remember the first time I actually talked to you in the Founders Inc. dinner, you mentioned this idea that is like so obvious in retrospect, but it so had a deep impression that basically like any idea, more than 90% chance it's going to fail, startup as well. So if that's the case, then cool. Start 10 companies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, yeah, you know, okay, only 10% fail. Cool. Let me just try 10. And by the way, it's not that each one has a 10% success rate per se, but maybe the first time, first startup, first idea is 8% chance. Then the second time it's 10%, 12, 15, because you're growing, you're learning, you're knowing how to not make the same mistakes. And increasing your odds. And you're also building a better intuition of like what works, what doesn't, what should I invest time in, what shouldn't I? So all of these things help you do it. And the analogy I like to create is around soccer, right? Like in soccer, if you have like a little bit of space, take the shot, right? Like you're not going to score if you don't take a shot. If you wait the whole game for the one perfect shot opportunity, sure, maybe you'll get it, but maybe not. Maybe it was the shot that you barely had a little bit of space that you took anyway that ended up going in.
Absolutely. That's been like my guiding philosophy for a really long time since I got started looking at the data also. Like once you realize again those odds and the way that I rationalized it was, you know, okay, 90% of startups fail. So you're telling me there's a chance. You know, so like the question then becomes like, okay, how do I put myself in the 10% that succeed, assuming that those numbers are correct, which I would argue they're probably higher. There's a higher failure rate. But that's the formula. Fine, let's stick with it. How long does it take to execute 10 ideas and see them through, right? So that at some point, the probability is in your favor because 90% of them might fail. How do I get to the 10% that's going to win? If each idea takes me, I don't know, 2 years to really see it through, Now you're talking about
20 years.
20 years of your life. So the question on day one as a founder is, do I have the conviction and the grit to see this through for 20 years? Right? To just stick to it, to kind of see what's on the other side. And you know, I committed to that pretty early. I said, like, as long as it takes, like, screw it. Like, let's make this happen. So again, I think that also leads to kind of processing these experiences in a healthy way. It's, I'm here for the long haul. Like, this is not the end all be all.
It's a marathon.
It's a marathon. There's a lot of variables, right? So like, even though from a probability standpoint, maybe I had the best chance so far, the environment wasn't the right one.
Mm.
That's okay. Let's get up. Let's try again.
Yeah.
And now I'm fortunate enough to, like, you know, working on the new thing, you know, it sort of did the, your stereotypical kind of like transition right now from like Web3 to AI, which, you know, you hear about, you make fun of it in Twitter. But nonetheless, like, there's a lot of excitement and momentum around that space, and just leaning into that. Like, that's a right place, right time kind of move, coming from a wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
Sort of negative situation.
Yeah. Yeah. At the same time, I think you want to be careful to just like follow the hype, but it's more so having a deeper understanding of like why the hype is there and what opportunities exist around like this hype. But also understanding the disadvantage, which is like more competition and eventually that kind of potentially getting in the way. But yeah, one thing I'm curious about here too is, how do you frame it in your mind? Like, is this a failure to you, or do you look at it in some other different way? Like, what do you think about when you think about like the company not having, I guess, worked or succeeded or failed?
Yeah, I guess there's kind of a couple of like lenses here. Like, on one hand, like, you know, I was working a tech job and getting, you know, 6-figure salary and living a pretty comfortable life before I quit that to go to, you know, forfeiting a lot of my equity there to go work on Noonshot, right, to work on my startup. So from purely monetary standpoint, it's like, all right, you go from, you have a lot of sort of like economic, you know, thing going for, and then you left that and then you go to this thing that didn't work. So from that perspective, it's like, wow, like, yeah, I wouldn't call that necessarily like a success or like a positive outcome. But what that doesn't tell you, like, that's only half of the story. Like, for me, leaving to go pursue my next thing was the most energizing experience that I could possibly do. Like, like, I started feeling, you know, very uninspired at my day job, and just leaving and actually getting to build something and getting to exercise my founder muscle once again, it was so rewarding. So, you know, when looking back at the time that I spent sort of working on Noonshot and building that startup, it feels like time just great spent. Like, I was doing what I wanted to do. I was feeling alive every single morning, and I was just solving hard problems and learning a ton. So I look at that from a very positive lens. It wasn't about, and look, as stereotypical as it sounds, like, you know, people say like, oh, it's about the journey. Like, you should really kind of like, if you enjoy the journey, like, you'll be fine. You know, work a day in your life, all that stuff. But honestly, like, for me, like, looking back, it wasn't even about the outsized reward at the other, you know, side of the rainbow. It was about doing the thing that I wanted to do and leaning into my passion, my curiosity, and just like building stuff. And I'm sort of like a founder at heart, and being true to that, I think, is what just made me feel alive. So I look back at it with just very, very, in a very positive light. Very difficult situations, right? But ultimately, I think I find, oddly enough, joy in like taking on a big challenge and coming out the other end.
Yeah.
So all the way from, like you mentioned earlier, like, just how do you have those hard conversations with your employees, investors? Like, what kind of maniac is looking at that and saying like, that's a positive thing to go through? But honestly, like, I think the fact that like now I can, in the moment it was very difficult, but now that I can look back and say like, wow, like, I was brave enough to have those conversations. Yeah. I was brave enough to face it, to look at it in the face and deal with it in a positive way. And now I feel like just so better equipped to go through it again, right? So like, my next startup is like, I know how to have those hard conversations, and I know how to deal with those hard, stressful circumstances. And I know what dynamics in the market and with investors to look at, to pay attention to start planning for it earlier, right? Whereas maybe like I didn't have like, I hadn't fine tuned that part because I hadn't experienced it before. And like now going through it, I know exactly like, all right, these are problems that may come up. Right.
Yeah.
And that makes me a better founder. So like ultimately the feeling is empowerment.
And increase,
much better off.
Probably increase in confidence too. Like, many people might feel that like if you fail, like that'll hurt your confidence. And sure, maybe it might. Mm-hmm. But for what I've realized is like no, if you fail, it should not decrease your confidence. Quite the opposite. It should increase it, because now you have a better idea of like what doesn't work, or you had those hard conversations and it like helped you become better at that, or whatever it is. You went through a difficult situation, you grew from it. Great. That should increase your confidence, because now you're more capable of dealing with that type of shit and knowing what mistakes to not make.
Easy to say right now. Right. And I think a lot of the stuff that I'm in a great moment and I'm like looking back and still, yeah, it worked out pretty well. But man, in the moment it was tough.
Yeah.
Like I completely understand the perspective of, you know, I felt defeated at times, and like, you know, I'm losing my confidence in myself and my ability to execute. I think what ultimately, like, you need a little bit of faith and a little bit of just trust that like, okay, fine, I'm gonna get back up and give it another shot. Right. That's all it takes. Like, as long as you have that little thing that keeps you going, you're like, I'm willing to give it another shot, even though I might not feel confident right now about it. But again, we made this promise right at the very beginning. It might take 20 years and 10 shots on goal, but let me go take another one. See what happens. But yeah, man, I think I had to rebuild confidence coming into the new startup. But just by showing up, I think the most important thing is show up.
Yeah.
Just by getting back up and showing up and trying the next thing, slowly started rebuilding that confidence. Slowly started like seeing like, okay, great. I actually learned a lot, and now I know how to approach things differently, and I executed a little bit differently, and it has a little bit better results. Again, begins to train that like confidence muscle once again. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's
a muscle.
Just because it ended up being a net positive experience in retrospect doesn't mean it was easy at all.
Yeah.
Very difficult, very painful. But ultimately that's how you grow. Like you need to have scar tissue. They don't call it scar tissue for nothing. Like, it's a tough thing to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never easy. Final question here. Like, how did you communicate this with your employees and investors? How'd you have that conversation? I'm sure that was probably one of the hardest parts.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, business is about, it's about people.
Yeah.
Right. Like, people use products, right? People build products. Products are kind of not even the thing. It's about people. Mm. Everything's centered around people. Creating value for people, building useful things for people, hiring great people, empowering people, supporting people in their journey through your startup and beyond. So having that as a guiding principle, I think it was very important. So with, you know, employees, it was, you know, from day one, the conversation that I have with them is around what are your long-term goals? Like, even beyond the startup, like, great, I'm so fortunate that we have you today working with us, but where do you want to go?
Mm.
Right? How can I help this be an experience that gets you closer to your ultimate goals? So when push comes to shove and, you know, you're looking at something like shutting down, it's about having a conversation around how can I continue to support you?
Yeah.
And making people feel valuable for their contributions, and just building that trust early and then maintaining it and showing, hey, I have your best interest at heart, and it's unfortunate, but like whatever I can do to help you goes a long way.
Yeah.
If I can put in a good word, if I can help you transition, if I can open up my network to you and help you land the next thing so you're not really impacted, not impacted as much. That goes a long way.
Yeah.
So for me, it's also like, you know, these are people that I might work with again at some point. So again, people first. With investors, I guess very similarly, it's like if I was in their shoes and kind of zooming out, right, from a third person kind of point of view, if I had put my money in someone, how would I want them to communicate with me if this is the situation that was going on? So I would want to know kind of upfront. I would want to kind of have reassurance that like you're trying your best.
Yeah.
So, you know, I took action on that, and, you know, I emailed investors pretty early, which was crazy, by the way, because, you know, it was like literally we're on top of the world. We're about to raise $2 million to like 2 weeks later, like, hey, we're, you know, it's looking dicey. Like, we might shut down. So like it went from like, you know, the highest high to the lowest low. So managing those expectations was important, but I think sending that communication early and saying, hey, it's not looking good, right? I'm not saying we're shutting down just yet, but I'm warning you that it's not looking good. And I'm also telling you that here's my commitment for, you know, the amount of time that we have left. Like, I'm committed to doing my best, and here are concrete things that I'm going to try to do to see if we can rescue a positive outcome.
I love that.
And that went a long way. I mean, some people didn't respond, didn't reciprocate. That's okay. But I heard from back channels that like it actually was well received by some parties, and you know, ultimately gives me peace that like I'm doing right by people, and on one hand try to do right by them, on the other hand I think also understanding that if you're making these kind of investments, like, you know, it's a high risk thing, and you should be aware that like most likely you're going to lose your money, and also not taking it too to heart, right? If someone loses their money, that you know, it's not the end of the world for, you know, accredited investors. Like, they'll be fine, they'll live, they're not going to go hungry. So it's a balance.
Yeah,
treating people well, but also like don't destroy yourself with guilt over letting someone down.
Definitely. Yeah. Because I mean, they acknowledge they're taking a high risk, but that also does not give you permission to be like, oh, well, I mean, part of the process, like, right, you still want to.
It's an art. Absolutely.
Deal with that as best as you can.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing, Claudio. I think a super valuable perspective. You hear about all the successes. I raised $1 billion, whatever, like all the fun things, but this is the real shit. So I appreciate the vulnerability and sharing a bit of the story. And I'm glad things are doing a lot better now with the new startup. So it's the power of pivoting.
For now anyway. But listen, we're in this for a long run, regardless of what happens. But nonetheless, I think every time, again, zooming out is very important for me. So zooming out and like looking at all my experiences kind of back to back to back, I like start to see a trend like, okay, we're getting better at some things, right? So hope, faith, and just commitment to just doing cool stuff. And at the end of the day, just, you know, do what makes you feel alive. And if that's not startups, go get a job. But ultimately, do what makes you feel alive. And for me, that's building. It's the journey. And yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in love with the journey.
Optimize for living to the fullest extent.
There you go.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks again for sharing.
Thanks, Julie. Cool.